welcome to episode 139 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in to our weekly chats will help push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there's anything you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Sandy, and I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Laura, Lindsay, Elizabeth, and Donna. Home to 26 ski areas and resorts, Colorado offers a wide range of options for adrenaline junkies of all ages and skill levels. From skiing to snowboarding or tubing, sampling great food and beer, or relaxing at the spa, America's favorite winter playland has got you covered. So let's explore some of the wonderful opportunities out there for you to catch a Rocky Mountain high. And they made me say that.
I didn't want to, but they made me say that.
Because it's legal in Colorado.
Yes, it is. Well, I recently went over spring. I'm Donna. I recently went over spring break, and I can tell you that is a fantastic time of year. The only downside is the weather's a little unpredictable. It could be really, really cold, or it could be really, really warm. And we were very lucky that it was really, really warm. So we got to do a lot of outdoor activities, but there's still snow on the mountains. So just about 2 weeks ago, they actually finally closed the last ski resort.
Wow. Yeah. So when you say spring break, what was your spring break?
Mid-April.
Okay, so late.
Yes, yeah. It was a later time of year. And so we went, and we went skiing out at Loveland Pass, which actually that's one of the local joints. To go to is Loveland Pass. Also, Eldora is a local place, but that had already closed because they didn't have enough snow. But Loveland and Vail and Breckenridge, Keystone were still open even in April. And of course, the last one and the most challenging is Arapaho Basin, known to the locals but as A Basin. It's actually one of the highest elevations, and so it is usually the last resort to close. Now, Loveland is actually at 10,000 feet. It's the pass that runs through Summit County, from Summit County to Denver proper on I-70. And it's right there at the Eisenhower Tunnel. You're basically skiing on top of the tunnel.
Oh, that's cool.
So, but one thing you need to know about skiing in Colorado as opposed to other parts of the country, the slopes are a little more challenging than what you may be used to.
So I would be hanging out in the bar.
They do have bunny slopes,
but what you would on the East Coast think of as a bunny slope would be the bunny slope.
Okay.
So if you're normally a blue skier on the East Coast, you go out west to Colorado, you're going to be skiing greens. Because they are considerably more challenging.
So talk about those colors, because I do have some clients who ski and they've taught me the colors, but I don't ski. So I didn't know what they meant until my clients taught me what they meant. So yes. Can you talk about those?
Well, your bunny slopes and your easiest slopes are going to be your green slopes. Those are the easiest on the mountain. So it's all relative. There's no definition that is a standard definition for skiing all over the world. What is a green? It's basically the easier slopes at that particular resort. Blues are going to be a little more challenging. Your black diamonds are going to be the most difficult. Then you've got double blacks, which you have to be out of your mind to ski.
Yeah, I have a friend who shattered his knee. He was in Breckenridge, actually, and he had done the slope that weekend, but then went that one more time.
That'll kill you every time. And then there's yellow bars. And yellow bars are the things that Warren Miller does. And those are the ones where you jump out of a helicopter and ski down a slope that is not marked and it's avalanche territory.
So like Mario Kart 8.
Yes! Now I'm a blue-green skier, but out west I'm definitely a green. And some of the greens were even challenging for me. My personal favorite is Breckenridge and Vail because they have a lot more selection. They're huge resorts. Breckenridge has three mountains that you can actually ski through. It's a very wide resort. And then you've got Vail, which is actually very deep. You've got the back bowls in Vail that you can go into. Breckenridge is actually a kind of a, what you think of as the Old West. You've got these, you know, kind of clapboard looking buildings. Then you've got Vail, which is very European in design, and little gelato shops and restaurants and everything. And so it's definitely great for your foodies. And like I said, we were there and every day was warm. So we went out and did other things. We went out to Rocky Mountain National Park and actually wandered around the park. We went down to the Garden of the Gods in Colorado Springs and climbed the boulders.
So how far was that?
Rocky Mountain National Park is approximately 2 to 3 hours from Denver. And then you've got Colorado Springs, which is about 2 hours south.
Okay, different direction.
Different direction.
Because that was, you know, I was just recently there and we had to be in Loveland for a derby tournament. And so we sort of like, what can we do with our last night? And we went to Breckenridge. And I kind of wanted to like pop over to Vail, but you can't really pop over there, especially if you have to fly back out of Denver because it's like another hour the other way. So yeah,
almost two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. So it's, you know, people talk about Breckenridge and Vail and it makes you think, oh, they're right next to each other. And maybe they are, but as the crow flies, not as like the car drives. Right, exactly.
Well, where's Red Rocks in relation to all this?
Red Rocks is actually out I-70 as you're going towards Loveland. It's actually, you go out I-70 and then start heading south a little ways into the hills, the foothills of the Rockies.
But you can see Denver from there.
Okay, so yeah. You fly into Denver. Yeah, that's on my list for next year. If Avett Brothers are playing at Red Rocks, I'm going to.
Loveland is just like, so Loveland is about an hour north of Denver. Loveland, the city. I don't know, because for the mountain, do you have to go out to like Estes Park? Is that sort of where it is?
That's where Rocky Mountain National Park is. Loveland Pass and ski resorts are due west on I-70.
Okay. Well, that's Estes Park is west as well, isn't it?
No. It's actually kind of northwest.
Oh, okay. All right. So, and then Fort Collins is another like 15, 20 minutes north of Loveland. Estes Park is pretty much north, I guess we just said northwest of mm-hmm. Loveland. Estes Park is where the Stanley Hotel is. So then, but the Breckenridge is like an hour and 15 minutes west of Denver.
Yes.
So from Loveland, we actually had to go back down to Denver and then over.
Correct.
Because of the mountains. So it's not, you know, so it was a 2.5 hour drive for us that day, but then it was only an hour and 15 back to the airport. Which incidentally is on the other side of Denver.
Yes, it's on the east side, basically overlooking all the prairies.
And what about Pikes Peak?
Pikes Peak is in Colorado Springs. And what I didn't, because the first time I went up there, if you are afraid of heights, do not go there. And at least driving wise, because there are no guardrails.
Oh my God.
So I
have a friend, there's a marathon, a Pikes Peak marathon, right? So you.
Oh, you'll be sucking wind.
Yeah. I have crazy friends that have done it. And I have this one, well, Ron Mahula, who was on the episode way back, he was on Everest when the avalanche hit and when the earthquake and avalanche, mm-hmm. and he came on the podcast. But, he's done Pikes Peak a couple times, but just missed the time cutoff, you know, so even though he's done all the miles, he doesn't have, you know, like, he hasn't done it. I think he's done it.
Well, that's the one, there's stairs that have been sort of cut.
There's a cog railroad.
A what?
A cog railroad.
Oh, cog railroad. I heard cotton, and I was like,
no, cog rail. There is a cog railroad that you can ride. Make sure you, if any time of year, make sure you have a heavy coat when you go up to the top. It's kind of like Mount Washington in Vermont. It's really, really cold and really, really windy. And I've heard there's really good donuts up there, but if you bring them down the mountain, they're flat by the time you get
really?
There.
Really?
I too, yeah.
Yes.
That's kind of cool. I would do that almost for the science experiment. Well, and that's true.
No, I saw it on like a diner show. It was one of those food shows because they were talking about how like they had to perfect the mm-hmm. recipe for the altitude.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true if you want to fascinate your children. I mean, like I bought a bag of peanuts in Loveland. And then we went to Breckenridge, and by the time we got there, it had blown up. You know, it's really cool. You don't. We didn't watch it happen.
You gotta vent the mustard.
Yeah, vent the mustard.
You have to vent the mustard. Otherwise, it'll end up on your ceiling. So yes, vent the mustard. Vent the ketchup.
The change in oxygen level really is something the first time you experience it too. Because I wasn't ready for it. I have family that lives in Colorado, and I went to visit my dad and my sister, and my sister lived in Fort Collins, and my dad was living in somewhere in the middle, nowhere. and we went up to Estes, And I got out of the car and I was just like, I mean, just walking up the stairs to get into the restaurant there was like, I almost needed a break.
Yeah. I saw this in Vail. You can buy canned oxygen.
I saw that as well, and it's not cheap.
No.
It is not cheap. It's like $15 for a little, like, two ounce.
If you have, I mean, it's probably worth noting, I have asthma and allergies, and if you have, that's like a cocktail for disaster in low oxygen areas, but if you have that and you don't know, if that's really...
I was there with my friend Walter, who skates roller derby and he weightlifts and he like does CrossFit. He's in really good shape. And I was so glad I was there with him because I am not in great physical shape, but I have been working out for like 6 months. I've been going to the gym pretty regularly and I was sucking wind in Breckenridge. I really was having a hard time. And I looked over at him. He's like, I think I might be having a heart attack. And I'm like, yes. That was a very nice. I was like, yeah, as long as you're uncomfortable too, then I feel a lot better because I just thought I was like a weak, puny thing. But yeah, it's not. And the difference, because we were fine in Loveland, but it's a 4,000 foot elevation difference.
Yes.
And you know, you drive the two hours or whatever, and you don't really think, our ears were popping and we were definitely feeling that change, but you don't think about it. And just walking, Breckenridge is not very big.
No.
And so you just walk along the main street thinking, oh, it's like a mile walk tops. And yeah, you're sort of dead by the end of it.
Well, that's like if you watch football, you know, they play, the Broncos play at Mile High Stadium, and it gives a lot of...
That's why they've got a distinct advantage.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, there was one player on the Steelers that it triggered his sickle cell, and I mean, he lost his spleen and his gallbladder.
Yeah.
And then he can't play when they go. They won't let him play, even though he wants to, which is crazy. But, yeah, so it really, yeah, it's definitely, they have, like, teams go and acclimate. Mm-hmm. It's a big... playoff thing. You know,
one of the things you can really use to combat altitude sickness is drink lots of water. That actually helps. No. Lots of water. And so it actually helps considerably.
But there's all those breweries in Denver, right?
Yes. Yes, there's some really good breweries.
That has to help, right?
If you acclimate a little bit.
Barley water.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Laura. And honestly, you know, I love going to breweries in Colorado. It's easy to do. You can't walk down the street without tripping over one. There's only two in Breckenridge, and one of them is Breckenridge Brewery, which is actually now part of AB InBev. So for those who are craft beer fans, they don't necessarily even want to go there anymore. There's only two, and one of them actually isn't, they're not brewing up there anyway. So, we actually found that we were kind of glad there weren't more that we were going to miss out on because it wasn't even, you know, people are like, oh, you get drunk so fast. No, you just feel really crappy really fast, actually. I mean, you fill up and it's like, you don't get the same, you know, thing where as talking to my friend who lives in Denver, Heather, who was on our podcast a while back, she's like, yeah, when I go to like Georgia, it takes me forever to get drunk because she's so used to that altitude that down here, it's sort of the reverse effect for her. She can drink lots and lots of beer and not feel it because her body is used to the higher, thinner air.
Yeah.
So let's take this back to skiing, even though we all really care about beer more. But so how do you plan a ski trip if you are a lowlander? How do you plan your trip to Colorado so that you can enjoy? Well,
no,
I'm actually talking about altitude right now. I want to talk about like, how do you make sure that you have like 2 days before you start skiing? Can you enjoy all the activities right away?
You can. I usually suggest doing something like tubing, which does not take a lot of physical strenuous effort to do. You can do ski or snow tubing and things like that. Just go play in the snow for, you know, a day. Take it easy because most people, they fly into Denver anyway. So you're not necessarily going to go directly out to the ski resort. You can actually spend, you know, a day or two in Denver, which helps you acclimate a little bit, then go out to the ski resort. If you're planning on doing a full ski vacation, you can rent all your equipment there and everything. Just, like I said, drink lots of water, and that helps considerably.
And that includes, like, drinking it on the plane. Don't drink alcohol on the plane. You know, make sure that you're already hydrated when you get there.
Yes, because not only, I mean, there's the altitude, but there's also that it's a lot drier than a lot of climbs that you're not used to. So if you're, you know, living on the East Coast or in the South or even in California, I mean, just the moisture humidity content is going to get you too. So you mm-hmm. just need to make sure that you're drinking lots and lots of water. Make sure you wait till you have that beer at the end of the day mm-hmm. when you're ready to quit.
Good advice. I wish I had followed it.
Because there's lots of good ones to try. Mm-hmm. Or you could also do the little flights, and that way you're only getting like 3 ounces at a time.
Well, that's, I like the flights, because then I don't feel like I'm missing out, and I wanted to try. Yes. I wanted to try this. I wanted to try that.
Yes.
So fast.
Definitely. Well, and we, because we knew the altitude, and we were trying to be good about it, we shared a flight. So we got a flight of six, which, you know, the first brewery we went to, CMB Pots, they have six flagship beers. So we got the flight of six, and then we shared it between the two of us. So we weren't drinking, you know, we were only drinking one flight between the two of us. So sharing a flight is one good option. And incidentally, clearly people still drink up in these towns, because like we pass an absinthe bar, which you can't find back home here in yeah, really? North Carolina. So we didn't try it. We were tempted, but again, we were already feeling kind of, you know, crummy. So we didn't want to, you know, make
so
that
do you
worse.
Think you weren't hydrating enough?
I think it was a little bit that, and I think also we underestimated the difference in altitude between Loveland. You know, we've been in Loveland for 4 days, so we were kind of, oh, we're adjusted, you know, we're good.
I would have thought
but
that
then
too.
You're going another 6,000 feet
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Breckenridge is at least 4,000, depending on who you ask and where you are, because we didn't go all the way, you know, we're just in Breckenridge proper. But yeah, it's so between 4,000 and 6,000 feet is a lot.
Yeah.
And so technically they say like for every 1,000 feet, you should give yourself a day. At least. And if you do it all at once, I think Heather said that you sort of need a week for every 1,000 feet if you do it all at once. So technically you haven't completely adjusted for 28 days.
So obviously, it's really hard to like just visit.
Right. But obviously people do it all the time. Yeah. So you know, not to discourage you, but just if you're ready for it. And I think water is the key thing.
Water is
oxygen, I suppose.
Thing.
Yeah. I suppose the oxygen might help some people, but I'm not going to pay that much for it.
No.
But yeah, it's, and you know, you see, if you watch reality television or whatever, like The Amazing Race or whatever, it's not, it's a real thing. And the football stories, there's lots
oh, no,
of them.
I know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's why Denver is always good on their mm-hmm. home turf.
Mm-hmm.
That's my team. You know, I had to make my pilgrimage. I had to go to the team store.
Well, it's good to know, because that's what I, you know, and I have clients who go, but then I sort of assume that they're just in better shape than I am or whatever, having just done this myself. Because we were there in summer, so we weren't skiing. It was just
well, but you can also do mountain biking and
yes.
hiking and horseback riding and things like that up in like Breckenridge and, mm-hmm. and Summit County and everything. You can do all of those things, and there it's not going to, those are not quite as strenuous necessarily.
And then there's also some other summer things that open up, like even in July, because I do think, you know, there was still snow on the mountains,
mm-hmm.
but there was not snow low enough down. Like you couldn't ski
the
mountain.
High country, yes.
But you know, we could definitely still see snow. So, so yeah, they said that most of the summer activities truly don't open up until mid to late July for the like really warm weather stuff.
But there's, I mean, you've got these ski bums people that they teach ski lessons half the year, and then they're teaching fly fishing lessons the other half of the year.
Yeah.
What a life.
Oh, darn.
What a life. So, okay, so you talked about Breckenridge and Vail. So maybe talk a little bit more about these local places. And maybe,
well,
you don't want to, but.
Loveland, like I said, the places that the locals go is Eldora, which is actually the closest location to Denver. And then you've got Loveland Pass, which is right on I-70 before you hit all the other big resorts like Copper and Breckenridge and Keystone and all. And that's where the locals go. And what we found, which was really good, is that especially being really close to the, what we call off season. I mean, our lift tickets were like $30, you know? Now I put the kids, I brought the two kids and we put them in a lesson, and it was for the lesson all day. All the ski equipment and lunch was $100 a person.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Which, when I priced, you know, Vail and Winter Park and all, we were talking double that. So you really do, you know, I mean, that's where you're going to find your bargains. And you rent your equipment right there on site. You can get them, a couple of places you can find if you actually do a little homework like I did. We bought our lift tickets at REI, and so we paid $30 because that's where the locals go. if we'd gone to Loveland, we would have paid like $45 and actually bought them there at Loveland. And so luckily I had my mom who lives there. I sent her to REI to go buy my lift tickets.
So what about the like, I mean, I understand renting the skis and stuff, but you can't show up in like jeans, you know? Yeah.
They rent gear too.
Do they rent like plus size gear?
They rent, a lot of places do have, you know, parkas and bibs and, you know, and I wouldn't want to wear socks that somebody else had worn. I prefer to wear my own socks, but they have the gloves, you have the visors that you can wear, you know. I it was actually warm enough that a visor was too much. I just put my sunglasses on and went. Mm-hmm. But I carried all my equipment with me, all my cold weather gear, but I didn't have to, mm-hmm. you know, so if baggage is becoming a problem, just go, you know, to the resort and you can rent all the gear. The other thing is if they really have extra room and you want, you can find some pretty good sales late in the season mm-hmm. when they're clearing out all their winter gear. So if you want to buy skis or you want to buy boots or poles or something like that, a lot of times you can get really good deals that late in the season because they're clearing out their inventory mm-hmm. because, or their used inventory because they're bringing in the new stuff.
So what I've heard is, other than socks, which is kind of a given as far as I'm concerned, boots mm-hmm. and helmets might be the two things that you want to purchase for sure before you go.
Not necessarily, because the resorts do provide helmets. They have the helmets. And if it's really cold, you're wearing a hat anyway, under your helmet.
Does everybody wear a helmet when they ski?
No, it is not required.
Yeah, because I never.
No, I never wore a helmet.
I didn't.
Really?
I don't either.
I've only gone a couple times, but it was in Virginia.
I never wore a helmet, and I only carry one pole.
Yeah, I've never worn one. But then, you know, I don't tend to hit trees.
Do you make your kids wear them?
I did. I made the kids wear them because they're learning. They don't know.
They're cracking their skulls.
They don't know how to fall properly. So you got to know how to fall properly.
I fell so many times.
In order to stay safe, you know, you don't want to fall into a tree.
I literally would stand up and fall back down again until I just got really mad and took off my skis and sat on my butt and slid down the mountain.
I actually had to do that because the one time when I was in Vail and I was in the back bowls where it was, you know, pure powder, there was probably a 200-inch base, and I'm sitting there, and when you fall down, you're supposed to spike your pole down to basically give yourself mm-hmm. leverage.
Yeah.
My pole kept going. Finally, after 30 minutes of sitting there trying to actually physically get upright, I just took my skis off and stood up and put them back on again because it wasn't happening.
Yeah. My friend came like skiing up to me. Come on, Sandy, let's go. I'm like, I'm going to be in the bar. Finish up and let me know when you're done.
And that's actually one of the biggest things that you have to remember when you're skiing. As soon as you get to the point where you're tired and somebody's pushing you to say, oh, let's just do one more run. Don't. Because that is when you get hurt.
Yeah.
If you're done and your muscles are fried and they're screaming, go down the mountain, go have your beer, take your shoes off, mm-hmm. get comfy, because that's when you get hurt. And that's when you...
I think I would just fall down and just be stuck there.
Roll down the side. Turn into this big snowball.
I ski with short skis, and that really helps me.
Are they like little kids' skis?
I noticed that.
They're about 150s.
I noticed they've gotten shorter. They used to have I remember when I first started skiing, it had to be a good 2 feet longer, taller than you were, and that's what you were supposed to use. And my skis this time were shorter than I am.
So is that, Laura, is that about right for you as well? They're about your height or shorter? How are your skis as short as you are, or as tall as you are, I should say? Sorry.
Yes, but just.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're not any taller than me.
Okay.
And usually, if they measured me, they'd probably put me in 170s or 180s.
And that's what I was using.
I just tell them, I want to ski in 150s. Because it's a whole lot, you know, it's less out in front of you, so it's less that you're having to turn. Hmm. And for me, it's what I learned to ski in. It's what my body knows how to manage. And it's what I'm most comfortable with. I only ski with one pole, and I ski with 150s. Because I don't really use my poles except to maybe get myself out or to pop my bindings out.
So talking about levels and things like that, we mentioned the green and the blue and the black. I've heard that, and actually I think this is my client who said this, if you go too early in the season, even some of the mountains that would be classified as blue might be green because of the snow level. Is that true in Colorado?
Well, it's just different. Like I said, because what you're used to skiing, I mean, I found things were a lot steeper than I was used to just because of where I was. I've skied out at Winter Park out in West Virginia as well as Snowshoe. And I even skied a couple of blacks. And then I went out to Colorado and I'm like, I could barely do a blue. And so it can change. And it depends a lot on how they've groomed the trails, the snowcats, how they've gone out and done them. But just expect that it's going to be probably a step up from what you're used to. And so just take that into account. And, you know, you should always start out on greens anyway to get your legs get ready and get your muscles going. And that way, you know, and then go to something a little more difficult and a little more difficult. Mm-hmm. And then.
So the season ends kind of late, April. When does it start?
Usually right after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Right around Thanksgiving is when the resorts open for the first time, usually. But there was some about 2 years ago that were, I mean, it was July before they closed.
It's crazy.
I know. They actually had some resorts they had to close because they couldn't run the lifts. Because the snow had gotten so high that they actually, I mean, you could drag your feet. In the snow on the lifts. And those are supposed to be real, like telephone poles. And yeah, they had to shut down because there was too much snow.
Wow. That's crazy.
But then it ran until July. So.
Yeah. My sister got married about 12 years ago out in Oregon, outside of Portland, Oregon, at a ski resort called Timberline. And it was in mid-April, and there was plenty of snow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the snow was, there was 3 floors in the lodge, and all the way up to the 3rd floor, there was, you could open your window and stick your soda out into the snowdrift. there was plenty of snow.
It sounds like true ski season is really more in, like, February to April.
Yes, that's their peak time, and you're going to pay extra for going during peak time. But there's also, thinking about the snow being so tall, there's actually a road that runs from in Rocky Mountain National Park out towards through there called Trail Ridge Road, which is only open from Memorial Day until about Labor Day. And, I mean, year-round, it's got snow. And so when they first plow it through, I mean, there's still 50, 60 feet of snow. Several years ago, they had all the forest fires and the flooding and everything that happened afterwards that next year that they had to keep it open up until November because there was no way to get to those people. Wow. That was the only road in and out that they could get to them in like Estes Park.
I just wonder why people, well, so I have a cousin that lives in Colorado, but she doesn't live in the mountains. They live like at the base of a mountain in a really hippie commune. such a hippie. But I think because of the way you have to drive, I think she's like 4 hours from Denver. I don't think she's very close.
Well, and Colorado is like that. It's a big state. And then, you look at something, you're like, oh, those look really close together. And yeah, not so much.
You can't get bigger out west.
Yeah.
There's a lot more land.
Well, if you're in USA
space.
Today, you think Colorado is Wyoming. I don't know if you guys saw that infographic, but yeah, USA Today labeled the states wrong. So it's pretty classic. So I think with anything, Colorado is very surprising too. Like when you land in Denver, you're landing outside of Denver, you don't even really see the city, and you hardly see any mountains. It's all just really, really flat. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very strange for someone who comes from a hilly area to then think, okay, I'm going to the mountains, and you land at this airport, and you're like, Is there a different Denver? Did I accidentally book the ticket wrong?
Did I?
Yeah, but it's not long before you see that there are mountains around you. But it's very strange because you can be in places. And we watched the sunset in Loveland. We would come out of this tournament and the sunset was like reds and oranges and just blazing over this mountain range that was way far away. So we get to Breckenridge and we're like, oh, the sunset's going to be great. And we went up onto like a rooftop bar area and watched the sunset. And it was just the sun went down behind the mountains because it's so high up, you don't get the bending of the horizon that you get. So I was like, wow, it's a really bright light. And then it's gone. I was like, oh, okay. Well, it was still pretty, but it wasn't like nearly what we thought it was going
to
be.
When we were in Yosemite, one of the things that the little newspaper or the campsite told us to do was go up to this place. I forget what it was called, but it was to watch the sunset. And they said that the sunsets are better when it's cloudy because of the light refracting through the clouds.
I can see that.
Yeah. So we actually picked a really clear night. It was just, yeah. But like the pictures I had seen were like what you posted that first night with like the really reds, pretty yeah. reds and yellows and stuff.
So. But that was, you know, we're in Loveland looking toward the mountain range. So it's really flat for a really long way. And then you've got the mountain range, Rocky mm-hmm. Mountain National Park, like mm-hmm. in front of you, but it's way out there. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too. Like when we were back in Denver, we could still see Breckenridge pretty much. I mean, like mm-hmm. you can still see those mountains. They're just really far away. So that's the way that lands. It's very deceiving as someone who is not used to being able to see past the corner of your neighborhood because of hills mm-hmm. or whatever. It's yeah. very strange to be able to look so far out. And so, yeah, those reds and oranges that I posted, mm-hmm. that was, you know, because we were looking more at horizon mm-hmm. level with the mountains sort of framing it. But when you're up higher, and there was a cloud in the sky, so we had that like Monty Python moment with the like rays of sunshine, you know, mm-hmm. it looks like that, you know, like the rays coming out of the cloud. But it was just a white sun just going down, which actually was kind of strange. It's just not what I expected. Yeah, exactly. Not what I expected at all. So, and it also sets earlier. You read, if you Google it, you're like, what time is sunset? 8:45 PM. Okay. So I got up at 7:30 and the sun was down by 8 because it's not accounting for the fact that there's a mountain there.
There's a mountain that it's got to
come through. The sun's still up. Yeah, but you can't.
On the other side of the mountain.
Yes, on the other side of the mountain. Exactly. So yeah, you just have to be kind of aware. And there were people who came up later who were like, Google said that the sunset was, we missed it. And I was like, ah. So, yeah. So, okay. So when you're not skiing in the winter months, what do you do? What else is incorporated into your vacation?
Well,
I know what I'd be doing.
Yes, but one of the absolute best things I ever did, blew all my expectations, was a horseback ride. Because, I mean, you're used to trail rides where, you know, it's nose to tail, nose to tail, nose to tail, nose to tail. This was a giant wide open space and they just said, okay, we're going to meet at that tree over there. Figure out how you're going to get there.
Wow.
And so we basically kind of just everybody did their own thing. And that way the horses were not quite as saddle worn and everything. And it was just a very interesting experience that, you know, growing up in Girl Scouts and doing horseback riding all the time, you know, I'd never done anything like this where it was just kind of like a trail ride. It wasn't, you know, a trail ride like I was used to.
Like the horse knew where it was going.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it was, this was more, it went where it wanted to go.
Wow.
And this is in the snow? You can do this?
You can do it in the snow. This was in the summer months. We went up to Breckenridge for a family reunion many, many years ago and stayed at the resort right there at the bottom of the mountain, and they still had the gondola rides mm-hmm. and everything. And that was one of the really cool things about going to Vail, even while there was skiing. When we didn't ski at Vail, but we went up and are like, well, how much would it cost just to ride the gondola? We just want to go up and see. We're not skiing today. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you can buy a lift ticket, an afternoon lift ticket, and you can go up, or you can wait till 4:30 and you can ride up for free.
Nice.
It's like, that was pretty slick. So, because what they had to do is they had to balance out the gondola. So everybody was coming off the mountain. So they needed people on the, going up the mountain to kind of balance everything. And so you could ride up for free, go up there, take a couple of pictures, play in the snow, you know, and come
Wait,
back
down. Wait, how do you get back down?
Yeah, I was going to say, hit their balance.
You could ride the gondola. You could ride the gondola. But that's one of the things that they would do is let you ride up. And that was a really neat experience. And you can do that, of course, year round. They have gondola rides. A lot of times they've got these alpine slides as well that you can ride in these little like roller coaster things. The other thing is there are quite a few gold mines around. And so you can actually go to one of these, you know, hokey touristy gold mines, but they teach you how to pan for gold. And, you know, you get a couple of flakes. It's worth about a quarter. But it was neat, and we got to play around, and we went into the gold mine and actually saw, you would actually go into the gold mine, and you could see the veins of gold in the rock. And so you could see it exactly the way it is. And they'd go in and, you know, do the big drill and figure out, you know, you could see how loud it was, and they'd tell you some history and stories about the mining industry. There are also quite a few museums in Denver. And there's a very nice amusement park with a pretty good sized roller coaster right in downtown Denver, right at the base of where the big REI is. And there's an aquarium.
Denver, went to the museums and I ate.
Yes. Lots of food to be had.
Oh yes.
Some of our guys had a rattlesnake hot dog or something. And actually at Breckenridge Brewery we had elk meatloaf, I think. So yeah, some exotic meats. Yeah,
a rattlesnake hot dog.
Yeah, I'll have to send you the picture of it. He said it was kind of plain. It didn't have much bite. These are my friends.
But there's lots of things to do even in the summer months. There's lots of hiking everywhere to be.
But in the winter, if you're not a skier, and the tubing, it sounds really appealing to me. Skiing does not sound appealing to me. I don't like the idea of standing and falling at the same time.
You can get like a
sit and fall.
Like a room that has like an outdoor jacuzzi kind of thing. That would be fun in the winter.
Is that a thing?
Definitely.
The tubing, the horseback riding, the panning for gold.
So I'm also
not so much the gondola ride because I'm still recovering emotionally from the last one.
Are you talking about the one in Alaska? I thought you meant the one at the water park at Disney.
No, the one at the water park.
That's a ski lift. That's the gondola is an enclosed cabin.
That was ridiculous.
That's not bad. Ski lift actually also intrigues me because I'm a little bit afraid of heights, but I mean, people do it all the time and I'm like, it just seems so unsafe. It just seems
It looks like a hanger, you know, like a clothes hanger, the way it just kind of goes.
Well, there is actually on top of the most lifts and even whether it's summer, winter, whatever, most of the time there's a bar that you can actually pull down to
but
kind
you
of,
can, but
it
you
looks
have
like
to.
It's just
no, you don't have to
flip right off of that little wire.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
But this is also a girl who's slightly afraid of horses. So, like the horseback riding thing terrifies me. And it's not. I think horses are beautiful from a distance, but you get right at them, and they're so big and so strong. I mean, to me, that's like trying to ride a tiger. And I know it's totally not the same thing. I know I'm not stupid.
Have you never ridden a horse?
I have ridden a horse, and it was terrifying the whole time.
But honestly, there's so much just to look at and see, and especially if you're a nature fanatic, just all the wildlife, you know, that's around
at Pike's Peak, there's like an elevator up through the mountain.
There's a railroad.
One of them. I researched a pretty big trip when I first started on this journey. For a family who was going to do Colorado, and it was somewhere right outside of Denver, and there was an elevator up through the mountain, and that would bring you right to the top of it.
Are you thinking of the incline on Pittsburgh?
Do you always have to slip in Pittsburgh with every podcast?
She does. It's her thing.
There's an area of Colorado that had a lot of hot springs.
And also, it's actually not that far. You can drive down to other parts of the state. It took us all day, mind you, to drive down to Durango. But Durango's got Mesa Verde National Park. And so you can do the cliff dwellings down there. There's the Silverton Railroad that you can ride down in the Durango area. There's the Million Dollar Highway through, which is, you know, up and driving trip through Telluride in that area.
That's, it cost $1 million to build it,
right? It cost $1 million to build it, and I want to say 1960. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a beautiful little valley, but, and this road is got lots of hairpin turns. So there's a lot of driving trips that you can do. There's also the, Giant Sand Dunes National Park, which is between Pueblo and Durango, that you can go and just play in the sand.
Telluride's a cute little town too.
Yeah, and you know, in the, I think in the northwest corner, there's dinosaurs. I mean, not actual dinosaurs. It's not Jurassic Park, but they found a lot of dinosaurs there. So there's lots of
archaeology and all.
So it is. It's a really cool state. It's actually one of the few places where I visit where I am never really ready to come back from. I never feel like I've seen enough of it. There's always like, we could go do this. Oh, we could go do that. There's just so much there.
And these little mining towns, you can just go and park the car and wander.
And good food.
Oh, yes.
Lindsay. Lots of good food.
Yeah, I did. I had some fantastic food when I was in Colorado visiting my family. And I had the only thing I can really remember of pizza, Bojo's pizza, Fort Collins. It was really good.
I heard about that. We actually didn't have that, but yeah.
It was very, very good. My sister went to college in Colorado and moved out there. And so she kind of knew where all the, she knows where all the good local food is. So I had an inn.
There is actually one other thing you can do in the summer. You can go whitewater rafting and tubing.
Yes. Oh, the Colorado River.
It's really, really, really cold. But you can do it.
I think what Laura was talking about with the elevator was that the waterfalls, Laura?
I can't remember, Lindsay.
There are like a bunch of waterfalls, and I think there's something with an elevator or an escalator or something.
I will say one of the, in the list of ways Walter is trying to kill me, for those of you who have not followed the podcast, my friend Walter is always trying to kill me by choosing these things to do. And actually the first story was when we went to Colorado last time, we went to the Wolf Conservatory there and got into a cage with wolves, which seems really, they were big, big animals. Beautiful though. And I survived. But I did realize halfway through the process that Walter said I should go with him because he can run faster than I can. And so now he's trying to develop all these ways to kill me. Skydiving is the one thing he really wants me to do, which I just think is really crazy. But he,
Elizabeth, those people that are constantly trying to put you in situations where you could potentially lose your life really aren't your friends.
I know. I need to have this conversation with him. But the thing that he found, which I was very grateful we did not have a chance to do because it was too far out. So he thought it was much closer to Breckenridge than it is. But you can actually go cliff diving in Colorado, about an hour away from Breckenridge.
Wow. Sign me up.
I know. And I'm like, you know, but they do have lower ones. I said, you know, I would actually jump in from one of the lower ones. Like, you can jump from like 70 feet.
Those flying squirrel suits you put on?
No, although he wants to do that too. No, cliff diving, like when you do like Rick's Cafe in Jamaica. Into the freezing cold water. I was like, you know what? I would jump off of one of the lower ledges, except for that water is going to be really cold.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
No.
When we were in Yosemite, I couldn't get in the water.
Judge your leap and plummet to your death.
Well,
you could also break your back hitting that.
I know. Like I said, lower ledges, I would be willing to do.
Let me tell you all the ways you could.
I know. You guys need to talk to Walter, but he'll just look at you and be like,
"Lower ledge? You mean like 4 feet above the water?"
Yeah. They said that they had ledges of varying, you know, heights, and I said, if you want to jump off the top one, I'll be at the bottom. I'll watch you die, and then I will jump in after your cold dead body.
And then I'll adjust my trajectory.
But that's the thing too. It's like the water must be absolutely freezing. And if I'm going to do something as stupid as jumping off a cliff, the water's at least going to be warm when I die.
It's going to be in Jamaica, right?
The higher you are, the more water hurts when you hit.
You really can break your back.
What your experience in the past has been with diving. But
you're preaching to the choir. It was not my idea, and we did not do it. But honestly, the cold water was enough for me to say no. Forget the height. It's just the cold water. But you can also zip line. There's lots and lots of zip lines and kayaking and like
yeah, that outdoorsy kind of stuff.
Yeah,
they got
yeah absolutely. Yeah. If you
so
want to do it,
there's plenty of activities year round.
Awesome. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode, or any episode, really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com and click podcast at the top of the page. And then you can find the episode you wish to comment on, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast, or just search for Fly Away, and you can leave comments there. And please subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of Lindsay, Elizabeth, Laura, Donna, and myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.